Hello, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia, and I want to record a book review. I wrote this book review, and it appeared in the summer 2015 issue of the Reformed Baptist Trumpet. I'm going to give a reading of that review now. This review is of Timothy Michael Law's book, When God Spoke Greek, subtitled The Septuagint and the Making of the Christian Bible. It was published by Oxford University Press in 2013, and it's 216 pages in length. The author, Timothy Michael Law, is the publisher and editor of the Marginalia Review of Books. This work, When God Spoke Greek, presents a non-technical introduction to the influential Greek translation of the Old Testament, which came to be known as the Septuagint, or the LXX. It also presents an apology for the Septuagint's ongoing significance for Christians. Law would revive the ancient debate between Jerome, who argued that the Hebrew text of the Hebrew Bible was authoritative for Christians and should be the basis of its translations of the Old Testament, as in his Latin Vulgate, and Augustine, who defended the church's use of the Greek Septuagint, the basis of the Old Testament translation of the Old Latin version. Let's begin with an overview of content. After an introduction in which Law argues that, quote, the Septuagint lies at the foundation of Christianity, end quote, page 7, he traces the historical background of Hellenization in the ancient world, particularly under Alexander, which resulted in Koine Greek becoming the lingua franca of the ancient world. He concludes this section, quote, the translation of the Hebrew Torah, the creation of the Septuagint, was arguably one of the greatest cultural achievements of any people in the ancient world, end quote, page 18. Law points in particular to the ways in which the 20th century Dead Sea Scroll discoveries have altered our understanding of the Septuagint and of the Old Testament. Some of the texts found in the Judean desert support Septuagintal readings in places where it diverges from the traditional Hebrew Masoretic text, which Law is fond of describing as medieval. Law calls attention to an early period of what he calls textual plurality for the Hebrew Bible and urges the reader not to distort this picture by looking back, quote, through the lenses of our present knowledge of the authoritative status later gained by the Hebrew Bible, end quote, page 32. How did the Septuagint translation come about? Law discusses the letter of Aristeus and its account of the work being completed by 72 translators, six from each of the 12 tribes, upon a commission for the royal library at Alexandria, Egypt, attempting to discern history from legend. His modest conclusion is that the Septuagint began with the translation of the Torah by Jewish scholars in Alexandria in the late 3rd to early 2nd century B.C. By the way, Law prefers to use the term BCE, before the Common Era. And he later expands his thoughts to include, or he argues that the Septuagint, after beginning with the translation of the Torah, was later then expanded to include the rest of the Old Testament writings. One of the distinguishing features of the Septuagint is the fact that it also contains the apocryphal books that are not included in the canon of the Hebrew Bible. Law provides a particularly insightful review of these works. If you look in particular at chapter 6 of his book, found on pages 58 through 74. The Septuagint obviously exerted a significant influence upon the authors of the New Testament writings, as evidenced by their frequent citation of Old Testament passages from the Septuagint. Law also provides a survey of various such usages from the Gospels to Paul to the general epistles in the New Testament. He is particularly keen in this review to argue that the distinctive usage of the Septuagint shaped early Christian doctrine. Sometimes, however, this is overstated. For example, Law comments that the doctrine of the virgin birth would not have been found in the Hebrew version, page 116. This might be challenged, however, given that the Hebrew term Alma in Isaiah 7:14 would likely have been taken to have the same meaning as the Greek word Parthenos in the same verse. Law's contention is that the early Christian usage of the Septuagint initially led to the adoption of a, quote, new Old Testament, end quote, based on the Greek translation and not the Hebrew original. This had an impact on the early Christian view of canon, as many accepted the apocryphal books and editions of the Septuagint as authoritative. Thus, he concludes, quote, the Septuagint stands at the heart of the early church, end quote, page 139. According to Law, then, most early Christians would have been shaped by the Septuagint, quote, without it knowing anything about its relationship to the Hebrew, end quote, page 139. Given this early success, how then did Christians come to a consensus that the Hebrew Masoretic text and not the Septuagint should be authoritative for the Christian Old Testament? Law concludes that the root of the blame, or the credit, goes back unintentionally to Origen's Hexapla. The Hexapla, now no longer extant, was a book from Origen which laid out the Bible in six columns of various languages, including Hebrew, the Septuagint, and other Greek translations, and allowed its readers to compare them. Early Christians noted the difference between the Hebrew and the Septuagint and instinctively believed that their authoritative text should not be based on a translation, but the original Hebrew. This shift was solidified when Jerome based his Latin Vulgate translation of the Old Testament on the Hebrew and not the Septuagint, despite the protestations of the likes of Augustine. Law wants to revive what might be called the Augustinian position on the Septuagint, though he wants nothing to do with Augustine's theology, which he terms, quote, the pessimistic Calvinistic model of predestinarian theology, end quote, page 162. He thus joins with other scholars who, quote, have sounded as voices in the wilderness calling for a reappropriation of the Septuagint as Christian scripture, end quote, page 169. While conceding that as yet, quote, the Septuagint has not been given the part it deserves in the drama of the church's reception and use of scripture, end quote, page 171. Let me now offer some analysis and response of toward Law's arguments. Law can be thanked for the survey he provides of the historical origins and theological influence of the Septuagint in Christian theology. Indeed, the movement he describes to reappropriate the Septuagint is becoming more self-evident as time goes by, particularly when one examines how modern translations of the Old Testament are increasingly preferring readings from the Septuagint and the Dead Sea Scrolls over against the traditional readings of the Hebrew Masoretic text. This remains a live issue also with regard to canon, one that still divides, for example, Protestants from Roman Catholics. In the end, however, we must defend what we could call the Jerome position with regard to preference for the Hebrew Old Testament over against Law's defense of the Augustinian view. The original Hebrew text, particularly that which came to be the traditional standard, the Masoretic text, must be defended as authoritative over against the versions like the Septuagint, no matter how they might have been providentially used in the formation of the New Testament, or how they might have providentially shaped later Christian doctrine. This matter was widely studied, and a consensus was reached and articulated in the classic Reformed confessions, like the Westminster Confession of Faith and later the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. These confessions stake out what we might call a Jerome position, in that they explicitly state that the Old Testament in Hebrew and the New Testament in Greek were immediately inspired by God. You can look at chapter 1 of the Holy Scriptures in the Westminster Confession of Faith and the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith. The Septuagint cannot be authoritative for Christians because it was not immediately inspired. The Jerome position on the Hebrew Bible as authoritative over the Septuagint is, therefore, the Reformed confessional position. Furthermore, those same confessions are also clearly articulate a canon that is limited to the 66 inspired books, the 39 books of the Old Testament, the 27 books of the New Testament, excluding the Apocrypha. Furthermore, they describe the apocryphal books, including those in the Septuagint, as, quote, not being of divine inspiration, end quote. So, in the end, Law is advocating a Augustinian position, whereas the Reformed confessions uphold what we could call a Jerome position. And this is not an insignificant matter. We're seeing this also in the modern translations of the Bible, where increasingly in the Old Testament, the translators are preferring to take readings again from the Septuagint or from the Dead Sea Scrolls or from the Vulgate, or to take minority versional readings as opposed to following the traditional Hebrew Masoretic text. And so Law's book certainly tries to champion the Septuagint, but in the end, I'm suggesting that that is an unwise choice. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this review. I am going to post this as well to sermonaudio.com and also to my blog, jeffriddle.net. There will also be a print version of the review that appeared in the Reformed Baptist Trumpet that can be accessed at jeffriddle.net. And again, I hope you found this helpful.